Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. What's up? Happy Friday. A lot going on in the world. Saban versus Jimbo continues. Some fallout, a pseudo apology. Deion Sanders gets pulled into the mix. Dennis Dodd called up D-Cell, the executive producer, and said, I got to be on Writer Than You. I need, as Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports college football guru, to give you the lowdown. And D-Cell said, okay. So we're going to have Dodd on in an hour. Pretty excited about that. Talk some Saban and some Jimbo. I'm still team Saban here. But The Athletic had a pretty good story on their relationship. Offer some context. Those of you that are team Jimbo, I get it. We'll get into that. We'll do Bum of the Week at the end of the show. A lot of candidates. A lot of people who are deserving. One of the people may not be the winner. I'm not going to tell you. But their name rhymes with Smish Law. Just Smish Law. Took D-Cell a moment. It's a Chris Paul joke. It wasn't a good one, but it's Friday. It's okay. Tiger looks banged up. Leg is hurting. Round started well yesterday. Did not end well. Four over. We'll talk a little Tiger. Andrew Bogish has some exciting stuff coming up next week. I will celebrate that. D-Cell will get probably grumpy. But whatever. We'll see what happens. It's Friday. There's energy. It's all over the place. We'll hit some buy or sell, a bunch of topics from sports. Trevor Story, pretty incredible day yesterday for himself after a slow start and his team. We'll hit some baseball, a lot going on. And at some point in the show, we'll try to preview, if we have time, little Golden State Warriors, Mavs tonight. Oh, and soccer! Little soccer news for D-Cell, because he loves it. He loves it. I'm also going to tell you right now, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. We need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it. Rocket can. Hell of a win last night by the Boston Celtics. And if I may be so bold as to lean into the name of the show, the arrogance of certainty and accuracy that is Rider Than You, we told you. Did I think that Boston was going to blow Miami's doors off and humiliate the Heat in Miami? I did not. Did I think that we've seen enough from Ime Udoka, the head coach, and the adjustments he's made, and from a Celtics team that has defined resiliency over the course of this regular season since January and postseason, that it would come to bear on the game and they'd probably win the game? I did. So I'll give you the headline. Celtics dominate. Celtics wins 127-102. Celtics have a borderline historic shooting night against one of the best defenses and one of the toughest teams physically and mentally in the NBA. Celtics remind us there's a reason they're in the conference finals and they can win an NBA championship. They reclaim home court advantage, or they claim it in this series for the first time. This thing's not over. Don't overreact. I'll tell you why in a second. Hell of a win. Hell of a win by Boston. Here's the takeaway, though. Here's the actual takeaway. Game one, Miami dominates, right? Dominates Boston. Jimmy Butler's amazing, 45, blah, blah, blah. Game two, and Boston did get Marcus Smart back, who was sensational. Sensational game. Almost had a triple-double. Was awesome defensively. And Boston did get Al Horford back, whose box score maybe wasn't sensational, but was critical to what they did if you watch the game. Just a really important presence. And a lot of folks are asking themselves, well, what's the takeaway? Which version of those teams is the real version? Both of them. They're both good enough to win an NBA championship. They're both the cream of the crop. And this series is far, I promise you, from over. One of the things about Boston, about the Celtics, that has been a remarkable reality this year, and the reason I bet on them last night, and the reason I told you to do the same thing, and the reason I thought Boston would win the game. Now, the line was basically a pick'em or Celtics plus one. Vegas thought it would be close. I thought it would be close, too. But it's usually about 1.5, 2 points goes to the home team. I don't believe in the advantage of home court advantage in a particular way in the postseason when you get deeper in the playoffs. I just don't think it's as significant as other people do. And I often would get offended when I covered the Miami Heat, when I lived in Miami, when I was out on South Beach, when people would talk about how Heat fans aren't really Heat fans because no one shows up. Not true. Great, great level of loyalty and commitment. They're just all on South Beach partying often, watching the games. Easier to get a ticket sometimes, I'm being honest, to a Heat playoff game than to walk into a bar in South Beach and watch the game, which I found out once when they sent me when I was at a different place to write about the fans. Like, oh, do you have a reservation that you got 5 months ago to sit at the bar and watch the game? No, man. Great fans there. But you saw that arena empty out. You saw Miami fans get the hell out of there. In large part because Boston absolutely humiliated these guys. They did. They crushed them. They owned them. And the keys to the game for me, and we talked about it yesterday, for Boston, can they get contributions from someone that wasn't Jason Tatum? Could Tatum kind of look like a star? Could he outscore Jimmy Butler or be in that range? Or could they get other contributions? And they got all of that and more. Grant Williams almost had 20. Jaylen Brown, who is a star, 24. Marcus Smart, almost a triple-double. Had a bunch of steals. I think he had 3 steals and a block shot. Guy was awesome. Even Peyton Pritchard hit some shots, and he's a good player. That Boston team, in terms of field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw percentage, went 50-50-90. 51% from the field. They made 20 of their 43-point shots. That's an absurd reality. That is, and I'm trying to think of the right comparison. That's like a quarterback in an NFL game going 30 of 33. It's like Mahomes going 30 of 33 for 400 yards. It's like some team over the course of a, I don't know, pennant game. Some MLB big-time playoff game hitting 600. It happens. It's not going to be repeated. And that's part of the reason not to get too excited. I woke up today and I was consuming a bunch of coverage. I get it. People overreact. People react. I understand. Oh, man, this is it. The Celtics are going to win. I knew it. The Heat, you know, don't have enough offense. No, man. This series is going to be about the adjustments these coaches make and the mental toughness of each of these teams. Because two things can be true simultaneously. One, the Celtics are certainly good enough to win the series. They're more than good enough to win the series. Two, they're not going to shoot 50-50-90 again. They're just not. What happened last night is a statistical anomaly. What happened last night is not common. And part of what I think benefited Boston is that role players tend not to play particularly well on the road, not to shoot particularly well on the road. There's a reality of going and just having to deal with the crowd and all that. But Miami had all of its fans on South Beach. That arena was not rocking. It was not difficult. It didn't feel particularly difficult. And again, I don't buy home court advantage anyway. And one of the big advantages to the Miami Heat's home court advantage has never been, it's never been the fact the place shakes like you're in an earthquake. It's never been the vibe of what Oracle was before the Warriors moved to downtown San Francisco or what Boston's like at their garden. It's often been the party effect. And I told this around the air, maybe here, maybe HQ the other day. I can remember covering the Miami Heat, being out, you know, going to a game, whatever, getting off at midnight, going to get dinner at 3 in the morning on a Wednesday. Like, the restaurants are open with a bunch of guys that cover the team, Brian Winters, whatever, Joe Goodman. And then going to a bar at 5 or 6 in the morning and seeing players who were playing the next day. And those guys would be just getting going. That impact, that hangover effect, that Stuart Kovacs party effect doesn't apply in the playoffs. It just doesn't. So the idea that the Heat have some remarkable home court advantage, it just dissipates in the playoffs because guys aren't going partying in the postseason the way they are in January. They're just not. I've covered it. I'm telling you, that's the deal. And the Heat aren't afraid to go somewhere else, in Boston in this case, and be effective and be dominant. Long ways to go in this series. I actually kind of like Miami to respond in Game 3. And I think it's – and we need to see what the line is. I mean, I'm not going to bet on the Heat because I've already got a ticket for Miami at 12-1 to win the whole thing. So I'm in a hedge position. But if you're looking at that game, Game 3 over the weekend, depending where the Heat are, I think there's some value there. You see bettors in the playoffs, and a lot of casual bettors who don't follow the NBA very closely, who see what happened in the previous game, and that recency bias overwhelms them. And it's a huge mistake. Tom Haberstroh told us yesterday that Luka Doncic, I'm going to get this wrong, D-Cell can correct me if you know off the top of your head, I believe after a loss this year, I believe he's 21-5, is what Haberstroh told us, which is incredible. And then Tom made the point, well, yeah, you can sort of, you know, what's the old Mark Twain? Lies, damn lies, and then statistics in the order of dishonesty. I get it. But the fact is that Tom looked into against the spread, which basically makes an adjustment for strength of the team that you're playing, right? It's even in theory, and Vegas is very smart. And Luka was 20-6, I believe, is what it was against the spread. So the Mavs can certainly win that game tonight, and I think they'll cover. I think they'll cover the line. And it's also true that Miami and Boston have been very similar this year in their ability to respond, to be undaunted, and to, because they have coaches who see what happened and make the adjustments, to be markedly better after a loss than they were. There's value for you. I'm telling you, there's value for you, depending where the line goes, in betting in each of these series. It depends on the number, but to lean toward betting whoever's coming off of a loss. And I told you this yesterday, and it was true. Boston this year, since mid-January, since their turnaround, they're under 500 January 17th or 18th, and they went on the best run in the NBA. They were out of the playoff picture, the real playoff picture, at that point, and they finished the season as the second-best team in the Eastern Conference. Going back to when they were under 500, since they were over 500, the Celtics have only lost back-to-back games one time. Last night would have been two. This is going to be a knockdown, heavyweight fight between Boston and the Heat. Both these teams are good enough to win an NBA championship. And I don't think Dallas is not winning an NBA championship this year. Can they get past Golden State? Can Luka pull them into the postseason finals, the NBA finals? Can Luka go 35-11-11 going forward and push this thing to seven and find a way to win it? Because we've seen the Warriors lose some Game 7s or elimination games at home. Game 7, 2016 finals. Yes, yes, yes. They'll spend everything they have. It's the Warriors on the one side or it's the Heat and the Celtics on the other. The Heat are not suddenly not contenders because they got dominated last night, and the Celtics have nothing guaranteed because they shot 51% from the field, made 20 of their 43-point shots, and went off for 90. There are, and I can't remember, I think it's 13 now, there's a couple handful of guys in the history of the NBA who have shot 50, 40, 90 over the course of a season. It's sort of the holy grail of efficiency. 50% or better from the field, 40% from three-point line, 90 from free throw. And if you're on that list, you're an all-time great player. You are a all-time top 25 player, or you're Malcolm Brogdon. That's basically, there's two categories. You're an all-time great guy, or you're Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon did it one year. Incredible. Never got the credit he deserved. You cannot lose. You will not lose an NBA basketball game if you go 50-40-90. These guys went 50-50-90. So yes, the Celtics were awesome, and give them credit. They played great. They played great defense. What happened last night is a statistical anomaly. What happened last night is a fluke. It is not going to be repeated. They're not going to play like that again. The Boston Celtics will not shoot that well in the playoffs again, and I think they're great. And the Miami Heat will not play that lackadaisical, lazy, like they were at the club's defense again. I promise you, right now, at this moment, as I'm speaking to you, Eric Spoelstra is either up in their grills or planning his psychological attack on their mentalities. They're going to listen. This series is going to be a dogfight. Don't let the score, whatever the hell it was, almost 30-point beatdown fool you. Miami's not playing that badly again defensively, energy-wise. I just mean effort-wise. And Boston's not shooting that well again. I think I'm betting on the Heat in Game 3. 855-212-4CBS. I'm Team Nick Saban. And I've seen, by the way, all the reports today, and we'll get into, I'll give you some of the details and the context, some of the reporting that's out there. The Athletic had a great story on Jimbo and Saban's relationship. One of the cruxes of this Jimbo-Saban rivalry, anger, the frustration, people getting pulled in, Deion Sanders talking, One of the things that's key to know is that Nick Saban, we are told, can be an egotistical, Jimbo called him narcissistic, it's kind of a different thing, egotistical, control freak, condescending, dominating, confidence-shattering, potentially personality to interact with. I cannot refute any of that. I haven't worked for Nick Saban, but in my interactions with him, he certainly thought I worked for him. He certainly didn't understand that a newspaper writer and then a columnist actually wasn't required to follow his every word, as if God, as Jimbo said, had come down from a mountain, pointed at me and said, you know what, here's what you're going to do. But I don't mind it. I liked the guy. I liked his arrogance. I saw the charm, because it was all in the service of success, and it was never phony and never hit it. This wasn't a guy that pretended he was your best friend and then turned into an evil boss. This was a guy who, I'm sure in the job interview, told you, it's my way or the highway. I'm Team Nick Saban, but there's more details to help you figure out your opinion. Jimbo versus Saban, the latest, round two, coming up next year on CBS Sports Radio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, welcome back to the show, Stock. Don't worry, Tom. D-Cell, good morning. What's up, buddy?
Good morning, Bill. Happy Friday.
Look, man, I'm trying to incorporate things that make you happy, right? To make you excited. I think that's a whole, like, end of the movie from that John Cusack movie about music, High Fidelity. I want to focus on what makes D-Cell happy. Soccer content coming later in the show, all right? Just bear with me. I got you. I love this Saban versus Jimbo thing. I really do. Yesterday, we were able, great work by Tom, to get you the crux of the conundrum. Alliteration is the lowest form of, like, pretend good writing, by the way. In that Saban called out at an event with boosters, with business leaders in Tuscaloosa, other schools for using NIL in a very strategic way that is not necessarily the spirit of it, basically funneling money to pseudo-independent organizations that aren't controlled by the university, wink, wink, and they basically pay players. You knew this was going to happen, part of the deal. And he called out schools in particular, including Texas A&M. And Jimbo Fisher yesterday got all mad and railed, how dare this narcissistic, thinks he's God. It was amazing. It was amazing. And one thing we didn't get for you yesterday that I want to play for you now is that it wasn't just Texas A&M, who's the only school that beat Alabama in the recruiting wars in this past class. It was also Jackson State. And you may, if you're just sort of sitting around, driving somewhere, waiting eagerly for soccer so D-Cell will be happy again, content here on the show, wondering why would the head coach at Alabama almost certainly the greatest college football coach of all time, a living legend who dominates major programs, be worried about Jackson State? Well, because Deion Sanders is the coach there, the Hall of Famer, the all-time great. And as you'll hear from Nick Saban in this event, feels like maybe even Jackson State's taking guys that other programs might want.
Hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys at Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. But the NCAA can't enforce their rules because it's not against the law.
Love everything about it. And I love the name-checking. I'm there. I'm down with it. If you're going to say it, say it. Deion Sanders, who's shy, to be fair, has never met a microphone that he likes, is very, very, very introverted. Sarcasm, by the way. I've been told by some of the bosses that sarcasm's hard to pick up on the radio. Got it. Noted. Deion, I'm just kidding. Deion was happy to respond, to not be happy, not be pleased, that he's just a tool. He's being used in the Jimbo Saban wars.
Coach Saban used me and used Jimbo Fisher as pawns in his plea for help from his boosters and his donors. We were just pawns. So now, he was really going at his people to up the ante so that he could outdo Coach Fisher. They just threw me in the fire because of what we accomplished in recruiting last year with Kevin Coleman and Travis and some others. They just threw us in the fire because he was the spokesman for all SEC and he was the spokesman for all the Power Fives by saying, hey, y'all, we can't let that happen again now. I'm going to go out on a limb. So I don't blame him.
Look, that's great content from the I Am Athlete podcast. Don't get me wrong. But come on now. Deion Sanders and Jimbo, they ain't no victims. They ain't no pawns. They may all be, I don't know. I played chess. I should be able to get here. They may all be bishops moving on the board. Queen. Oh, there could be a queen. Is that what you want to go with, queen, Bogus?
I can't do this. Like my head shaking was not at you. It was at me. Like, I've got no idea where this is going to go.
Where do you go, right?
I don't know chess enough.
Oh, it's a great game. It's a great game. I love getting online and, like, I'm good at chess and then losing 14 in a row to some 12-year-old and then stopping chess for 2 years until another Netflix show comes out. That's my chess career.
Yeah, that's kind of echoes mine. Watched the Netflix show with...
so good.
And then was like, let me have this for the house. It was COVID times. Yeah. The kids and I can learn chess. And my 8-year-old learned it faster than me, and that was enough for me.
Chess is a great game. And by the way, all these guys are playing chess, including Deion. I'm a pawn. All right, so big brouhaha. I want to set this up because I want to get the guys. I'm Team Saban. Just like some of you about the werewolf and some of you about the vampire and that show with the actress who's in love with each other. I don't know. It's my best rep. Twilight. I always forget the name of Twilight. I've seen the first 2 or 3 movies. I have no idea what happens. Does she die? Anyway, don't tell.
Don't tell America.
Me. It's 20 years ago.
And there are books.
Is she a vampire?
I don't know.
I don't either. All right. Nick Saban went on Sirius XM, and after having a long Twilight conversation, he then sort of apologized.
I should have never really singled anybody out. You know, that was a mistake, and I really apologize for that part of it. But I'm not against name, image, and likeness. I think it's a great thing for players. You know, our players made a lot of money last year in name, image, and likeness. But, you know, I told our players to, you know, get an agent, get representation, you know, make what you can make. Players have always been able to work, and I think that's a good thing.
Last thought. The Athletic, before we get the guys' take, The Athletic had a great piece today. And not just because I think it's interesting as a reader, as someone who's done that for a living, the response to the breaking news and the sourcing that this writer put into giving you context that's reporting-based is excellent. And the gist of it is what you might expect. As you may know, and we talked about this yesterday, Jimbo Fisher was the offensive coordinator under Nick Saban during Nick Saban's very successful LSU run. And when Saban went to the Dolphins, he reportedly wanted to bring Jimbo with him, and Jimbo was over it. Because Saban is a demanding, brutal, control freak boss. He's one of these coaches, you're going to work all the time, You're not going to get a lot of love and credit. And in the story, it walks through how Jimbo was a young, incredibly ambitious offensive coordinator with nothing wrong with that. Get it? Who was very creative. And Saban's philosophy and approach was, in practice, we're going to spend a lot more time on the defense, and we're going to run when we go offense versus defense. And remember, Saban's a defensive guy, so it felt to Jimbo like Saban was playing his favorites. Saban's thing was, we're going to win the game with our defense on Saturday, and our offense is going to be good, but it's not going to be the focus. So you're going to give me your play sometimes. They would go at each other, and Saban wouldn't give Jimbo a lot of time with his guys, according to the reporting, and then would say, give me the actual rundown of what you guys are going to do, so that Saban can give it to his defense. So they would know the plays that the offense was going to run in practice, so the defense could dominate the offense and work on whatever Saban wanted. And Jimbo found it stifling and frustrating, and he couldn't even beat his boss in practice when he didn't have a fair shot and a fair shake. And then Saban would say to Jimbo every day, every week before the game, all right, how many of this kind of play are we going to run? What's the philosophy here? And if Jimbo, because Saban has an incredible memory, would run two more plays of a certain type than he was permitted, Saban would start chirping out on the sidelines. Saban was such a control freak in the games. He wanted the offense to be much more staid and safe than Jimbo did, that it created, in the context of Jimbo's ambition, like we all have, desire to show what he could do, like we all have, and just his frustration with Saban's general personality, a lot of friction. And the story walks through that. And I've had bosses who were really hard on me. And one of them in particular, I do not like, not a good guy. But I've had bosses who were really hard on me who were good people. And depending on my maturity level and where I was in my life at the time, my career, I have different relations with those guys. Got better at understanding my role as I got older. And Jimbo was a pretty young coordinator back in the day. He was sort of trying to break out. So that's the context for this brouhaha. There's more than just what happened yesterday. There's a whole career of Saban being over Jimbo. Jimbo obviously elevating to a remarkable level of success. Not believing Jimbo Fisher that Saban's approach to constructing a winner, the culture he created, was the right one, right? It doesn't matter how successful you are. If you don't agree with some of the things, you don't agree with some of the things. And it all came to the forefront yesterday. I'm Team Saban. I think he's the best coach of all time. I think Jimbo's a phony. And by the way, the story hits this, that a lot of people out there think he's a phony, including the coaching world. But a lot of other people are like, no, he's not a phony. He's a great guy. You just have to get Jimbo away from work. Their read is the difference between Jimbo and Saban is away from work. Jimbo Fisher's a wonderful human being, like warm, kind, where Saban holds himself apart. Okay, Mr. Bogish, are you Team Saban here or are you Team Jimbo here? And this is like Twilight.
Mm.
You got to choose. It's like Shaq and Kobe. You don't get both jerseys. You don't get to wear, you know, both jerseys on a Wednesday and a Thursday.
Yeah, my inclination is to answer this question in a way that actually doesn't answer this question, like maybe a D-cell would one day.
It is a D-cell.
Yeah, but so to not do that, I'm on Team Jimbo.
Really? Okay. I appreciate you not giving a 12-minute answer that has nothing to do with the question. That's a wonderful, wonderful moment. Really, Team Jimbo, why?
Well, first of all, Nick Saban is never the victim. I can't stand for him playing the victim in this, like, woe is me. Like, I'm going to have to start doing this now on Wednesday because Jimbo Fisher's doing it. And I'm just going to applaud for sheer entertainment value that Jimbo Fisher authored one of the best takedowns. Whether or not it's factually true, I don't care. But he eviscerated Nick Saban to a level that I can't remember two other coaches. You know, players talk trash, but these are old men, grandpas, I think, and they're just, I mean, he laid into him like no one I can remember in recent memory, and I was all for it yesterday.
I mean, look, you make it, it's a great point. Nick Saban playing the victim is a little, but it's to a strategic end. I think Deion Sanders is right. Saban's real goal, right, D-Cell, is just to, he's saying to his boosters, go do this, you morons.
Right. Yes. Sorry, D-Cell. Go ahead.
Well, you set me up for this really, really well, so I appreciate that. Between Team Saban and Team Jimbo, I am Team Saban because I think he is absolutely right the way that he lays how NIL is supposed to work versus how it's actually working. But once Deion Sanders responded last night, I love what Deion said. I think he's absolutely right. I'm with Bogish. Saban is not a victim, and Deion pointed that out. There is a motive to what Saban is doing right now, but it doesn't mean that he's wrong.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It reminds me so much of my interaction with Saban, where Saban was kind of wrong with me, and was over the top and was so offended that I would dare ask him why the Dolphins thing didn't go well. This goes back to 10 years ago, and I spent a bunch of time with him his first, you know, couple months, and or it was a couple months into his time in Alabama. But he was so direct and honest, and then kind of apologized afterwards, but it was only to the end of getting a positive article. I like candid people. Like, what I dislike about Chris Paul is not that Chris Paul yelled at me, is that Chris Paul pretended he was a super nice guy on camera while between takes being the rudest person ever. It's phonies I have a problem with, not egomaniacs. And I like Saban's authenticity, even if he's authentically, as you're saying, Tom, full of crap, right, and just like self-serving and strategic. And I, because the thing about Jimbo is, Saban's not wrong. If Jimbo had come out and been like, yeah, we did it, that's the way that it works, he'd do it if he could. He wasn't as good as we were. He's a narcissist. He's playing God, but he's not good at playing God anymore. I'm down. But, like, I think Jimbo's got his own, oh, how the outrage. Everything Saban said is true, Mr. Bogish.
It's true, but if the motive, and I think Deion's probably right, that this is about not even NIL change and regulation, he wants more money from Bama boosters, he could have accomplished that without taking shots at specific people. He could have let us think we knew who he was talking about without actually saying Texas A&M, or even, I guess, we never would have gotten to Jackson State. It's really a tough thing for me to swallow with him sitting up there and pointing direct fingers at people and going, wah, 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 they're breaking rules, we can't do this. So if there's truth in there and necessary things to be said, okay, but the delivery turned me off so much that it's hard for me to even process them.
Wasn't this way incredibly more effective, though? Like, I'm with you. He could have danced around it. He didn't have to name Texas A&M Jackson State, but look what's happened. Like, isn't this way so much more effective?
Well, the only way it's really effective is if all of a sudden whatever bank account they're looking at starts adding money to it.
You don't think after all this pub that it's caused that it's not going to work with the Bama boosters?
I agree
with you, Diesel. I also think, like, Saban's so smart that, yeah, if a kid's going to get paid more, he's going to get paid more. But now every success story of A&M going forward and every success story, however many there are, of Jackson State going forward, recruits, parents, media members are going to think, I wonder how this compares to Saban. Saban's creating a false, I think it's really smart, a false narrative, right? The context for every time A&M wins, it's because they cheat better than Alabama. It's not fair, but I think it's really smart.
So then the attack was two-pronged. The attack was to get more money and also to take a shot directly at Jimbo.
Yes. I mean, these guys constantly, you guys know this, people that recruit for a living, a huge part of being a great recruiter of college football or basketball players is the ability to, in a charming way that you don't realize in the moment, put down everybody else. Like, being able to talk badly about your competitors in a way that doesn't feel like you're being petty is a skill of recruiters. It's not just come to my place like, oh, yeah, watch out. So I'll use an example of a guy that I really like, Scott Drew. He's obviously overcome this. He's obviously talented. But back in the day, Bobby Knight, when he was at Tech, and all these other Big 12 coaches would talk a lot of smack about Scott Drew to people like me and to players and try to because they were threatened by, I think, Scott Drew's rise, right? He overcame it, but a big part of recruiting in secondary teams in the Big 12 many years ago when Drew was just getting started at Baylor and had some good classes wasn't just come to this school that isn't Kansas or Texas. It's here's why you don't want to go to Baylor and be around Scott Drew. So I think what part of what Saban is doing is trying to poison a little bit, right? You poison the well with just one parent of a future recruit, and it's a win.
Okay, but then that changes the way I view Saban's comments even more, that if he's already that if he's that bothered by Jimbo and Deion to the point where he's going to be petty at a business dinner on a Wednesday night, even though he knows the Cubs are going to get out, he should be above that. He should be better than that. He shouldn't need that platform to throw elbows at Jimbo Fisher. He's Nick Saban.
He wouldn't be Nick Saban, I think, if he wasn't that strategic and that petty. Again, I was a Kansas City Star reporter the first time I met him. I was nobody. My thing was going to run in a place that would never affect Nick Saban. And he wanted to have a war for an hour and a half with me about the meaning of the words I asked him. I just think he's built that way to dominate. And I'm trying to remember, A&M beat Alabama, not just in the recruiting race, but they beat them last year, right, in a really close game. Yeah.
Their only regular season loss last year.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's some pettiness there, and I think, I mean, one of the mistakes that people make in leadership roles, we've all made it if we've had those roles, is you hire someone at a certain level, and you have trouble seeing them, when they've grown beyond that, it's hard to sort of visualize that. I'm sure whatever condescension Saban had toward Jimbo back when he was his boss 20 years ago remains, even though obviously Jimbo Fisher has gone on to massive success in his own right.
And I think the way that the NIL is working right now, Bama is not just losing recruits to A&M and Jackson State. Like, Saban is mad at the way the system is working right now. And I think A&M, there is a little personal history, obviously, as you well pointed out with Jimbo Fisher. I think A&M and Jackson State were the easy targets here. A&M, the number one class, and Deion Sanders is doing an excellent job of recruiting and getting kids that normally wouldn't go to Jackson State to get there. I think people are getting lost. These are not the only two instances that Saban is upset with. He's mad at the whole system. Bama is losing recruits across the country, not just to these two programs.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's other by the way, before I forget, just like a 180 subject change. Andrew Bogut, congratulations. I heard you're doing pre- and post-game on the Mets next week.
Oh, that's a subject change. Yes, that is Monday and Tuesday night.
It's exciting.
Before and after Mets and Giants.
How can we catch you for those of us that are not in New York City?
That's a good question. I don't know how the streaming app works in MLB. I don't know if there's blackouts. DCL is giving me like a very hesitant nod. So I don't know if you're outside of New York, if you go to the Odyssey app and find WCBS 880, if you can listen to a Met game. But I think you can, without getting too deep into radio minutia, I think that works everywhere. So that would be my first guess, is to go to the Odyssey app or Odyssey.com if you really want to hear me introduce an interview with Buck Showalter on Monday or Tuesday night. Then go get it and find 880 WCBS.
It's exciting. Pre and post shouldn't be blacked out.
No, I guess not. And the reason why I think you might be able to hear it everywhere is because before this season, when the Mets were on, they were only on the radio. And then normal WCBS programming continued online. But now the Mets are on both. So the only other option is if you're outside the listening area, there's just no 880 stream where you are. So, again, if you really want to listen to it Monday or Tuesday, test it out this weekend, and then we can work on a workaround.
I love baseball. That sounds like so much fun. By the way, I tried to come up with some references for the Jimbo Saban thing. I came with the Twilight werewolf vampire thing.
Right.
Shaq Kobe should have done D-Cell Bogus, because I know you, the listener, can't see these guys like I can. I'm really happy for Andrew. I think it's really exciting. You're a Mets fan. It's baseball. You're a great broadcaster. It's like, put it all together. And over here, D-Cell's looking all like, I don't, whatever.
No. Me and Bo.
Yeah, you are.
We are not friends at the moment, but I am happy for him. And not only will I be listening, you know what? I'm going to record it, and we can play back some highlights, maybe.
Yes.
Oh.
Bye. Hell yeah.
When I'm here to defend myself or when I'm not?
Let's see how the broadcast goes.
Fair point.
I will say this. Somebody, I won't say who, my wife, brought up that the only rejoins that D-Cell ever plays are the ones that make me look stupid. And so I would just... She's like, didn't your other producers like mix it up? I'm like, yeah, they did. Bogish, I'm just telling you, you might want to monitor the clips before we get into that in a week.
Can I defend my friend Tom DeCelestino for a second here?
Uh-oh.
I'm pretty sure there's a rejoin where somebody talked about how good your show is. That he's happy to stay on hold for you.
He deleted it.
Oh.
I snuck it in one day, and he told me, don't ever do that again. I'm saving your Jimbo. It was amazing. We've gone super late. Do you guys know that Tiger Woods is all banged up? It's pretty brutal to watch. Physically banged up, the way I am emotionally, from D-Cell's attacks on Bogish. On Tiger's struggles and what may be some misplaced hope that at some point he can turn it around here on Rider Than You after we get a CBS Sports Radio update. From Andrew Bogut.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
I just can't quit Tiger Woods. I gave up the ghost a few years ago. I held on forever, believing he'd win another one. I think he's better than Jack already. It's my generation, right? Want him to actually pass Jack, which requires several more majors to be won. And then when he won that Masters, or what are we, 2 years ago now, Tom? That sound right? Maybe three? I just remember it was like you had gone to Never Never Land and then convinced yourself it wasn't real, and then you're 50 and Peter Pan shows back up. It was just, or in my case, 44. It was amazing. So I wanted to believe this weekend, even after the car wreck, even after the fact that he's been physically in some trouble, even though his leg, I worried, might not be enough, that he could do it. And then he birdied, I think, hole one. Just got off this great start. And yesterday the wheels came off, and after his round at the PGA Championship, Tiger talked about reality crashing down on him and the rest of us that wanted to believe, and just where he's at physically.
Yeah, my leg is not feeling as good as I would like it to be. We'll start the recovery process and get after it tomorrow. I just can't load it. And loading hurts, and pressing off it hurts, and walking hurts, and twisting hurts. So it's just golf. If I don't play that, if I don't do that, then I'm all right.
By the way, Tom, this guy, I think, has become such a likable guy, from being a robot that was super unlikable to what was, you know, fair or not fair. People's personal lives are really, I think, it's dangerous ground to assess. But his public marital, his approach to marriage is not the one that I or probably you would adopt. Was very public. That's very humiliating. I think he's come full circle in being a very fully dimensional, interesting, nuanced human being.
I think he does a great job with the media now. Now, yesterday, he did have a little interaction with the cameraman, asked him to back up a little bit, where it was like a flashback to the old Tiger.
I liked it, though.
It didn't get as heated, but there was that moment where you were like, oh, man, what's going to happen here?
But that was on the course.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm not disappointed in his play. I'm disappointed. I feel like, having watched round one, I feel like Tiger should have skipped this event.
No, I mean, I get it. He can't win. I hear what you're saying. I think he actually loves the sport in a way that now he can separate. I'm playing armchair psychologist, which is always a very good idea. Sarcasm alert. But my read of it is the guy can separate his ambition, his desire to win, from his love for the game. So I think, like, unfortunately, it's a great point. You know how at a lot of these events, especially the Masters, Jack and Arnie back in the day would go and do the ceremonial first, they tee off the very first hole, and some of the old-timers would play for a while until they got tired. So it was ceremonial, but it was cool to have them out there. Tom Watson almost won the Open Championship 10 years ago in one of these roles at, I think, like 59. I think Tiger's closer to that, right? Love of the game, not win the game, than he is what he was maybe even 4 years ago.
If you would have told me that Tiger was going to shoot a plus four in round one, I have no problem with that. But then when I hear Tiger say, I'm really, really banged up here, the leg is in bad shape. Tiger told us months ago when he first spoke after the car wreck, hey, guys, look, I'm probably going to be a part-time player now. The reality, it is what it is. I think Tiger, I love his desire to win and love for the game. He's 46 years old with a laundry list of injuries.
But why? If he wants to play, let him play. If he plays badly, he plays badly.
I don't enjoy seeing him limping around the course. It's hard to watch. Playing poorly is one thing, but watching him struggle physically is another.
Yeah, and I get it. But if my thing is, I've graduated to a point where I can enjoy Tiger, hope he can be competitive, but still cling. Maybe it's nostalgia. There's a level of appreciation for me in watching him yesterday play badly, as you said, struggle, that I didn't have 3 or 4 years ago for some reason. Maybe because he's older and it's not quite as realistic to be like maybe he can win four more. But I hear you. It is a little Willie Mays, I think he might be my favorite athlete of all time. He's one of them. Is that crazy? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry, Mark Grace. I take it back. Let's talk some Saban Jimbo with Dennis Dodd next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.